We've got Parsach Ramos Kedoshim Tavshinayin Hey. So we're going to talk about Ovidoni, the crazy little magics of Ovidoni. So it's three times in this week's parsha we mentioned these magics. Parak Yud Tes, Pasuk Lamed Aleph is the first time. Al Tifnu Ela Ovos Vel Yidonim. Do not turn toward the Ovos and the Yidonim. Al Tivakshu L'Tamu Behem. Don't try to become Tamei for them. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God. That's the first time. So that's the first warning that you get not to be near the Ovidoni. And Parak Chav Pasuk Vav HaNefesh Asher Tifnu Ela Ovos Vel Yidonim L'Znos Acharam. The person that goes toward the Ovos and the Yidonim and Asatius Panay Ben Epshahu. So I'm going to put my face upon that guy and I'm going to cut him off from the midst of the people. So again, we get the punishment, okay? So we say that he's going to get kares. At the very end of the parsha, the very, very end, last pasuk, Chof Chof Zion, the Isha Isha Kiyabahem Ov O Yidoni, most you muscle, but Evan Yergamol Sam Demeim Bum. They're going to die, you stone them, their blood is upon their own head. So we've got three things, really. We have the warning not to do Ov Yidoni. We have the punishment of Ov Yidoni, which is kares, and the punishment of Ov Yidoni, which is going to be skila. So a double punishment. Skila if they get warned for it, kares if they don't get warned for it, that's going to be there. Now, we're going to learn a lot about the Ov. We're going to try to skip over the Yidoni a little bit. Rashi in Sanhedrin, Samach Heyom et Aleph, says it's a warning for the person asking the Baal Ov to do it for him. Remember, there's two guys involved. There's the guy in Baal called the Baal Ov, the guy who's going to be doing the magic calling and everything, and then the guy who asks the Baal Ov what to do. So that's the second guy. We've got the guy asking the actual Ov itself, the guy doing it, we're calling that guy the Baal Ov, and then the Shoel, the guy actually making all the questions, the asker and the doer. So Rashi says that the warning in Sanhedrin, he says, is only for the asker, whoever asks the Baal Ov. The guy actually doing the magical act is not Chayiv. Seemingly, says Rashi in Sanhedrin, he's not Chayiv from this lav. The Ibn Ezra says it's for both, the asker and the doer. Now, Tosfos over there in Sanhedrin asks on that and says, wait a second, if there's a warning for the person that's asking, then that means that the guy asking the Baal Ov is going to be Chayiv Kares, because this parsha talks about the Chayiv Kares. But we see that's not the punishment that he's supposed to get. The Rambam says he's only Chayiv in a lav. So it can't be. That can't be what we're actually talking about. So he says, rather, we're talking about the person doing it, the Baal Ov, the guy actually doing the magic itself, but the asker is only over on a lav. The Rambam in the Minchas, the Sefer Achinuch Paskin, that way, and Marsha says that Rashi says it as well in the Chumash. In our parsha, Rashi went back at it and says that it's talking about the Baal Ov. Now, it happens to be, Rashi wrote his parish on the Gemara before he wrote his parish on the Chumash. So if he wrote something on Chumash that's different from what he writes on the Gemara, that's because in the end, he went back on that psak for whatever reason, and in the Chumash, it's his final pshat. So that you should know altogether. So when he writes this over here, he's going after. Tosas asked him the question, or Tosas asked the question and answered it. Rashi went back on his original pshat in the Gemara and said this over here. Now, where does that word Ov come from? You might notice it. I think if you got it just a little bit, look at the word Ov. What does it look like? Looks like the word Av, right? So the Ibn Ezra says it comes from the word Ka'ovos Chadashim, open flagons. You know what a flagon is? It's okay if you don't. It's like a massive jug where you put in wine and stuff like that. An open flagon, an E of Lamed Beis Yotzeh, according to Ibn Ezra, that's where he gets it from. Anybody have any clue why this would be referred to as an open flagon? Ov? It's okay, really, it's okay if you don't know, because I have absolutely no idea. Absolutely no idea where the connection is, no clue what he's talking about. Absolutely no idea. But I would prefer, would like an answer. David Ezra says that's where it comes from. The Me'ash Yiloch says Ov comes from the word Av, as in Av b'chokma, that you want to figure out something, so you go to the father, the one that's in charge, you go to him. Yidoni comes from Yodea Hanhago, somebody that knows something. Yidoni is showing you something. That was the point of this, was to say that you can't understand the reasons behind the mitzvos that we do. You just have to do them. In other words, you have to go ahead and do them even though you don't really understand it. You want to be an Av B'chokhman to try to figure it out, ask the magical properties what to do. You want to be a Yadoah, a guy that knows everything. Sometimes you just can't. You got to be okay with the fact that you just can't get there. That's what it is by Av and Yadoah. That's what Ov and Yidoni go for. Now, I said that Ov comes from the word Ava, as in Lo Ava Yidmi. My brother-in-law does not want to marry me by Yivamos, right? So Lo Ava. Ava is a word of desire. And maybe the Ov Yidoni is this guy that desires to be close to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he's just doing it in the wrong way. We're talking about a guy who's desiring something there, and I found that in the Igret HaKala later, but it's my pshat. The Igret HaKala just stole it 200 years ago. I'm just saying that that's my official pshat that I have, and he also says it as well. But those are the three answers as to what Ov means. It either means father, or for some reason an open flagon, or it refers to this idea of desire, wanting to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, choosing the wrong direction. So clearly it's a big love. I mean, we're mentioning it three times in this parsha, right? So clearly it's something that's there. Rashi says the reason why is because if you get involved with these things, you're going to be discussing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Chizkuni says, you had so many other ways of discussing with God what to do, you didn't need magic. You could have gone to the Beis HaMikdash, you could have used the Urim and Tumim, you have Nevi'im to go to, you have great rabbis to go to. But instead you're going for this guy, you're going to the guy who worships Baal, who worships, goes into this. That's ridiculous. Don't get involved with that. That's the Chizkuni's answer as to what Rashi means. Don't get involved. You can't be metami yourself with such things. The Igra Dekala adds on, you know, every time you pass by a McDonald's, you get a mitzvah for not walking into that McDonald's and buying any of their burgers. The problem is, you really weren't going to go there anyway, because the meat is disgusting, right? And it's about the size of, I don't know, about a napkin. So it's really not that big of a mitzvah, is there? So it is. And here's the reason why. If you do this, you have to go by McDonald's and say, you know, I really want a cheeseburger right now, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me I can't, so therefore I cannot go to McDonald's. And if you do that, you get a mitzvah for every time you walk by. You say, I really want one, but I'm not going to. Not saying you have to. And if you ever end up going to McDonald's, then I'm going to punch you in the face for doing this. But by regular McDonald's, that's the idea. The mitzvah happens if you push yourself, right? And then afterward you say, no, but I can't do it. Says the Igra Dekala, this is the B'nai Yisachar, you cannot do that by Ovi Yidoni. Why can't you? Because once you start saying, I really want to know what the future holds, so I want to go ask that talisman, that guy who's in charge of this, I want to go find out what he's doing over here. I want to go figure it out. If you do that, you will do it. It's different from pig, where you can get yourself to stop. It's not that big of a taiva. This is a taiva that every human being wants. I want to see myself 5 years down the line. I want to know what to do so that I'm not in charge of my own whatever it is. That's the idea behind it. We're telling you, al tavakshu, do not get involved. Don't even ask. Don't get involved at all. Don't even put yourself in this situation where you're saying, I want to, but I won't. Just say no to Baal Ov. I know that's a new phrase. Just say that I'm never going to do it, and don't even say I want to. No, you don't want to. It's the only love that's like this. What are you going
to
say, Fran?
I was going to say, isn't there an opinion that says the highest level is not even to want to do, like not even want to do
it? Once you get to the point where it's not even like, it's not even a havamina for you, that is the highest level. But to get, in order to be makayim, what it means to keep the love, because I'll say the way it's supposed to be is supposed to say, I would desire that thing, but I'm not going to have it because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, not because I don't want it, but because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me not to have it. You know what I'm saying? So even if it's almost like you're lying to yourself, I don't really want a cheeseburger right now, but you have to say it in order to say, I'm only doing it because Hashem, not because I don't desire it right now. It would be that way, and that really is a higher level. What's up, Jake?
Is there something that says about it, by Shrotzi, we're not, like, we were given the mitzvah not to be disgusting, as like a free mitzvah,
because
nobody actually wants
it. Because it's disgusting, and blood, right? Drinking blood, the lav was given, right? Even though nobody really wants to drink blood except for vampires, and they might not exist, right? So normally that's not there. Nonetheless, blood, right, blood. We don't have that. What?
Blood sausages.
Shaila?
Blood's what?
Blood sausages.
Blood sausages. Oh, I guess there are things, obviously there's taste. Raw meat obviously tastes better, right, than things like that. Blood, actual?
Actual blood sausages.
Okay, I'm not saying that people aren't normal. People aren't normal, right? Right, people eat locusts also, and we do that. Regardless, that's the idea behind it. These are the guys that are right there. Now, Tom Vidas, I'm just going to give two homiletic explanations of the pasuk. In other words, two ways of looking at the pasuk that is not pshat. In other words, you can't understand this as a pasuk pshat that's going in here. Tom Vidas says, you should never hire someone as a rov because of his great father. You get it? Al tifnu ala avos, not a ovos. Don't turn to the avos and say, oh, that guy's dad was great, so I'll hire him. Or because he knows a ton, even though he's not really Mekayim the mitzvos. He's a yidoni, a guy who knows a lot, but he doesn't actually accomplish the mitzvos that he knows about. Such people will surely be metameyu. Al tevakshu letama behem. Don't ask for that guy, because he will just be metameyu. Rather, choose someone whose derech is with Hashem, ani Hashem elokeichem. That's the rabbi that you should choose for yourself. Then everything will be successful. That's the way the Tam Vadas understands the Rav Sternbuch, his way of understanding the pasuk in a different way altogether. The Shach says a different muscle. We shouldn't think that if our avos, again, our avos sinned and did cause the Beis Hamikdash to be destroyed and couldn't bring it back, that our we ourselves, we will never know any better and we won't be able to do anything. And that's avos v'yidonim. Don't think that way, that there's no chance. It's not true. Don't be metame yourself by thinking they have to give up, that you have no chance. No, trust in Hashem and He'll bring you your Kedusha back. Never give up hope no matter what, because even though they weren't able to bring it back, perhaps maybe you will have enough power to be able to bring it back on your own. Maybe that's going to be enough on your own. Who knows what's going to be? That's the shock's answer is what's going on. Now, let's try to understand what Ovidoni is. We're done with the homiletics, the little things over here. Let's figure it out. In the Gemara Center, Daf Samachay, the Ovs is called Pisom. It's accomplished by doing the following. The dead man, or the guy himself, is able to speak with somebody that's dead, and the voice comes from either his armpit or his elbows, where there's a voice coming out from under here or within the elbows right here, and you can hear a voice coming from that area. The Edoni is when you take a certain bone of a creature and you put it underneath your tongue. We're not going to talk about that. That's for another time. But Edoni is another thing altogether. It's from the bone of a Yadoa, which is another thing altogether, but just in the Ov itself. The Rambam, Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Vav, Halacha Aleph, says that first they burn incense. They're makter Ketores. Then they take a rod of hadas, right, a regular thing of hadasim in their hands. They wave it around. They speak softly a few known phrases that they know, right, that these Balayov know. That some, and until what ends up happening is it seems that someone is speaking back. It seems, the Rambam doesn't believe this ever happened, but he says it seems like someone is speaking back, answering the questions with a deep voice, calling out from the ground. And if that happens, right, then you know that you've gotten involved with Baal Ov. That's what Baal Ov is. That's the Rambam. He says a second shot, and they're both mentioned in the Gemara. He just expands upon it a little bit. He takes the skull of a dead person, somebody who had already died. Well, that's easy to make him dead. He burns incense to it, does nichush, a certain type of magic with it, until a voice can be heard from, again, from his armpit, that answers what he wants to know. So two different ways, says the Rambam. One is with the skull, and the voice comes from the armpit. The other one is where you take the hadas in your hand, say a couple words, and a voice comes out from the ground that's very, very deep. Okay, those are the two pshatim in the Rambam, what Ov is. And it's similar to what the Gemara says, but it's not clear from what the Gemara says. The Gemara also brings down that there's a way of taking the bone, or maybe the skull of a dead person, and putting it on that area of your body. And then you're able to speak, the dead man is able to speak from that area of your body. The voice comes from down there. That's the idea. That's a third one that the Gemara mentions, but it's a bit of a strange one. Well, they're all strange. It seems from Rashi and Sanhedrin that you have to put a certain bone or body part of the dead person on that, and that's what I was just saying, but Tosfos rejects it, the Rambam goes with rejection, and that's that. Yalkut Ruveini says, I'm sorry?
Rambam agrees with
Tosfos? So Rambam goes with Tosfos' pshat. Yalkut Ruveini says, a man stands at the head of a grave, and a woman stands at the foot of the grave, and they have a bell or something that goes in between. They ring the bell in between, and then the woman listens for the voice, and the woman can hear the voice coming from the armpit of the dead guy. Not the armpit of the guy who's doing the bow o. It's the armpit of the dead guy where it comes from. Thus, at the end of the parsha, it says, you look over here at the top of the page, Chaf Chav Zayin, the Ish O Isha. It's got to be a man and a woman together. I know it says the word O, but Darshan's got to be the man and the woman together, says the Yalkut Ruveini, for both to be involved. The Raita says it's got to be done in a cemetery, so that the voice comes from the dead person, from the body of the dead man itself. But the Kesef Mishnah says, I don't know where he got that from. The only case that we have of Ov in all of Tanakh is Shol HaMelech, as we'll talk about soon, and that was not in a cemetery, that was in the woman's house. So we don't know where he gets it from, that you actually have to do it in a cemetery. Turn to page 2. Rav Victor Miller explains, Ov was fundamentally a way of contacting the dead. Your dead parents, your dead relatives, in order to request their intervention for someone that's in need. You go to the dead people and you ask them for a little bit of help. Yidoni is gaining knowledge in an unusual manner. This all led to worship of your ancestors, to those who were already dead. And that was the problem. It implied that your help could come from someone else, from Hashem. The halacha is that you are allowed to go to cemeteries, you're not allowed to daven. But you can't daven that the dead people should help you. That would be usher. You can daven that they should be an intermediary, so to speak, so that they should bring down, they should open up the gates so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should hear my prayers. But to actually daven that the dead people, that the dead, even a tzaddik, should daven for you seems a little strange. Sota Lamedalit, you can check out the Bach there. There seems to be a couple Gemaras that do seem to say that Kalev daven to the Avos to help him during the Meraglim. There are some things like that, but we're not allowed to do that. And that's what Balov is, asking the dead to do everything for you. There were imposters who did this that were sometimes met with success, but most of them are just absolute liars, and that's that.
What we're supposed to do is say in schus of this person, though?
In the schus thereof, or, you know, to open up the heavens for me. But that's it. Not to actually take my tefillah and accept it and do it themselves. The Ibn Ezra says that, since this is written in the Torah, there are people that say that it must work. If it didn't work, the Torah wouldn't write about it. And to be honest with you, it does get me a little bit. We paskin that you're not allowed to do magic tricks, even though we know that it's sleight of hand. We paskin lahalacha, that's true. Why? Because the Rambam holds that all these magics are fakes. Ov, Yidoni, everything was a fake. Which meant they were all charlatans. They were all sleight of hand guys. And if they're all sleight of hand guys, then that means that the Torah is asering sleight of hand. So you can't do sleight of hand. So you go to a magic show, you should kill the guy. Right? That's what should really happen. Because technically, it's never mutter. Now, the Reb Moshe was asked, but if I'm really good at something, you know those guys that are so quick, they like can do things and like do crazy stuff with their hand, they can show you cards, they do card tricks and everything like that. Reb Moshe was asked, how is it possible that these guys are not allowed to do something which is a skill that they gain naturally? Was Shimshon not allowed to be all strong? Was Naphtali not allowed to run really fast? If you have a great skill, why can't you use it? So to these magicians, Reb Moshe says, it makes sense, I hear you. But I can't matter it because everybody else asers. So whether you should go to a magic show, I'm not going to paskin that for you. There are people that say that you shouldn't go to magic shows because that's what's asered from the Torah. That's what's asered. Either way, the Ibn Ezra says, I know there are people that say that it works and that it's real and everything like that. He says, no way. No way. There's no way this stuff works. It's all a fake. Anybody that says that it's real is a liar. Right? None of it. And you're just a fool if you think that it works. It does not work, says the Ibn Ezra. There's no way it works. Yonasan ben Uziel and Unkelis call it Bidin. Bidin means to lie. It's a bunch of lies. So both of them must hold like the Ibn Ezra. It's a bunch of lies. This is all fake. It's all liar. It comes from the word Asher Badam Milibo. He made it up on in his own heart. Yeah, Jake, what's up?
First of all, just because it's a skill, if someone's really good at stealing things, like he's very good at not getting caught,
make it
much harder,
no, I mean, we're talking about the same guy. These magicians that are really, really quick are usually really good at thievery.
I think, but why is it as far as, just because it's a skill, so
you
should be able to use it.
I hear what you're saying, but it's not that it's a skill to steal. It's a skill that you're very quick with your hands. So why can't I do something which is really good, which is a great skill with my hands? Why would the Torah ask for it? Now, I hear you, but nonetheless, it should be, it seems like the Torah's offering magic. It's not offering sleight of hand, right?
Yeah. Innately wrong with moving your hands quickly.
Yeah, and if I do something really, really quick, I just happen to like really quickly, do you see the coat go from one hand to the other? Ooh, like what's the big deal if I do that? That's the idea behind it. I take a knife and I put it up, right, and I go like that and it goes down there like my dad does all the time, right? It doesn't really go up his nose. I'm 99% positive. So if he does that, right, how is that possible? I remember when I was a little kid, my dad was an amazing magician. Right? I remember one rub going up to him saying, you know, it's not the best thing to do, and he stopped. I remember him acting like a clown. Regardless, my dad's like a clown, you know. But like, he was acting like a clown at my birthday parties. And he never did it by any of my brothers because he didn't love them as much. I'm just saying, Rafi, it's not your fault. But either way, he just never did it because at that point he was told that he couldn't do it anymore, right? And he stopped doing it. And he was really good. He had all these tricks, all this stuff. And now the only thing he has left is that knife up the nose and out the ear, which is a little sick. But regardless, that's the only thing he does. It just seems like, what's the problem? What's the big deal if you do stuff like that?
Yeah. The problem is that they're looking into the future. That's the whole thing. If the guy is doing magic as an entertainment, it's got nothing to do with figuring anything out. It's just, oh, that's cool.
But nonetheless, this is what's... you're right. In other words, maybe it's only us or if you're doing it for the bad purposes. But it seems that it's us or all together because you'll come to do it for the bad purposes. You'll come to fake it in a different way. I know in Brachos Nun Tes, we call the guy an Uba Tamya, like a shyster. Rav Sadigon says the exact same thing. Now, the truth is, all of this is really answered by Shaul HaMelech. Listen, I'm not going to go through the whole thing right now, but by Shaul HaMelech, this is what happened. Okay, we're not going to go through the whole story, but basically this is what happened. Shaul HaMelech was coming toward the end of his reign. Shmuel and Avi had just died. The Plishtim were gathering to fight in a war, and David HaMelech, who Shaul HaMelech was trying to kill and was not successful in killing, David HaMelech already defected, he faked it, but he was defecting to the Plishti side. So Shaul HaMelech saw that his army was going up not only against the Plishtim, but also against David HaMelech. And he asked the if he wanted to find out from a Kaddish Baruch Hu, what should he do? Should he fight? Should he this? What should he do? What should be his plan? He asked the Nevi'im had nothing for him. He waited for a dream, he got nothing. The Urim B'Tumim he couldn't because he just had destroyed Novir HaKohanim, and the Urim B'Tumim wouldn't answer him. So he had no way of getting any audience with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. He didn't know what to do. He davened, he wasn't being answered. So he said he took one last chance, and he went to a Balas Ov, and he asked the Balas Ov to bring up the body of Shmuel and Avi in order to ask him what to do. And it worked. It actually worked. Everybody argues right there. Their argument between all the Rishonim and the Akronim is, was that Balas Ov for real? And this time, it was just crazy, like it happened a little bit better than it normally did? Or was that Balas Ov always a faker, right? And this time it happened to work. Well, that's what everybody asked. Was it fake and it worked this time? Or was it always real and he just made it more real? That's a machlokas, the Radak, the Ralbag, the Barbanel, the Malbim, everybody. Everybody argues the point about what it is. Is it this way or that way and everything like that? It's just a huge thing. Just remember, the one thing that we have to remember about Shaul HaMelech, who we went to, he did not go to a regular woman. The woman he went to was the mother of Avner ben Ner. Avner ben Ner was the general of Shaul HaMelech's army. Her husband was Zephaniah, the famous Navi. We're not talking about a slouch. We're not talking about a nobody. We're talking about a person who was a very, very, very holy woman. She was the Balas Ov. That also tells you something about the whole matter of what's going on here. So we'll get to that. We're going to come into it. The Torah Tamima quotes its first law, the Marash Halgazi, that says that nowadays, close to the times of Mashiach, the Ora Locus has spread throughout the world, the light of God, and Tumah has begun to flee, and therefore the powers of these magics have been nullified. That there's nothing left from all these magics. Nobody knows. Even if they know how to do it, it's not going to work anymore. That Baal Ov is not going to work on it. Anybody who thinks that they work today has something wrong with them, he says. But it did work back in the day. And that's why you'll find that there are Matirin, right, that say, you can still go to these magic guys to go find out if you had something stolen from you, what to do to assuage your fears. Because it's not going to work, but it makes you feel better. And the whole shot is that the only thing that's usher is going to a real Baal Ov, and really, real Baal Ov don't exist anymore. That's the shot that the Tzfaris Yisrael brings in the Torah Tamima quotes from them. Rav Sternbuch in Tam Veda says that it makes sense that when Nevuah was available, prophecy was available, then powers of Tuma were there as well. There were big powers of Tuma, and this is one of them. But now they're gone, and anybody that claims to be working these things is probably a liar.
What about Ruach HaKodesh?
I'm sorry, Ruach HaKodesh. I mean, we still have a very small form, but we don't have anybody that really has Ruach HaKodesh. I mean, if somebody got up today and said, I have Ruach HaKodesh, here's what I saw, we'd kill him. That's another sheker. You can't get up and actually say that you got a nevuah. No such person exists. But a person to have a little bit of Ruach HaKodesh to do the right thing, make the right decision, that we accept. That will do. But nobody can get up and do it. So that's the idea behind it. The Akedas Yitzchak, is a Sefer HaKomesh, says that we see Malachim appearing before human beings throughout Tanakh. We see Eliyahu HaNavi coming back from the dead in the Gemara. We see Rabbi Yehuda Nasi came back from the dead in Ksuvis. We see all that, right? After they died. They use some sort of a levush that we don't understand. He says it's not hard to believe that that's the same thing the Baal Ov did. It gave the dead bodies a levush, an ability to come back to life, and it came in. But we'll see the Red Baz later on. Now here's a really crazy thing. The Rabbeinu will find Moshe Zakenim and the Baal Turim tell us the Ov does not work on Shabbos. Gemara Sanhedrin Samachayim Abay says it depends what kind. This skull thing, you know, where it talks from your armpit, that worked on Shabbos. But the talking to the dead and having a call out from the ground, that never worked on Shabbos. In fact, Rabbi Akiva was asked by Turnus Rufus, the famous general, or whoever was the governor of Eretz Yisrael, who eventually he married his ex-wife. It was good times for Rabbi Akiva. Right? Rabbi Akiva, when he asked, Turnus Rufus asked, what's the proof that there's such a thing as Shabbos? Rabbi Akiva said, what do you have to ask me for? You know that Baal Ov doesn't work on Shabbos. Baal Ov cannot do what they need to do on Shabbos. It was like an obvious thing. Rabbi Akiva just said it. He's like, you want a proof that there's Shabbos? I mean, why do you need a proof? You know Ov doesn't work on Shabbos. It was like such an obvious thing. They knew about that. But they say that it's all from there. The Rokeach and the Panach Raza say the dead person isn't Ola. on Shabbos. And that's the reason why the psukim before Baal Ov is talking about Shabbos. We go into Shabbos and then Ov to tell you that the Ov doesn't work on Shabbos. That's the pshat behind it. Says the Chasam Sofer, we don't need this as a sign. The non-Jews need this as a sign. For us, we know that Shabbos is intrinsically holy. But the non-Jews don't. So the non-Jews need this as a sign that they should know that Shabbos is different from any other day. Sefer HaChassidim. I don't know where this is. Everybody quotes it from Siman 1050. It's not in Siman 1050. So I have no idea where it is. I looked through for about 10 minutes and then I was like, you know what, this is wasting my time. I can't find it anywhere. So I'm just quoting it the way the other Sfarim quote it. They quote it in Tuf Tuf Reish Nun, but it's not in Tuf Tuf Reish Nun. So I don't know where it is exactly, but he says, if a person is lost in the desert and doesn't know what day is Shabbos, the Sefer HaChassidim asks, can he use Ov to go find out what day is Shabbos? Because if it doesn't work, then he knows it's Shabbos. If it works, then he knows it's a weekday. Can he do that? He says, don't. Don't do that. First of all, if you're lost in the middle of the desert and you see a skull and you're ready to do Baal Ov, that is awesome. I'm not going to tell you to do it. I'm just saying that that's the first thing you do. And I wonder, I've always wondered if Baal Ov works. Nobody speaks about it. If it works on an animal skull, the same way it would on a human skull. Can you use Baal Ov in the same way? If you ask the animal skull, does it move afterward? Like, is that how it gives the answer? I'd like to know, but I doubt that it actually works. If it would, it would be awesome. What are you going to say? Get back to it, don't worry. Part of that, Rabbi Victor Miller says Al Tifnu is used twice when regards to Ovi Nidoni, because even when in great distress, like Shaul HaMelech that we mentioned up above, he needed to ask, he had to find out what to do, even that you have no ability, no, you're not allowed to use these magics whatsoever. Thus we're not warning only the evil people to stay away from this, we're even telling the tzaddikim, right? We're even telling tzaddikim, stay away from this no matter what. Now you think that a tzaddik would have an excuse. Listen, I normally go to Nevi'im, Ruach HaKodesh, dreams, whatever it is, but I can't now. I need a message and I can't get it through there. Maybe I can get my message through the Baal Ov. Maybe I can go to the Baal Ov. Comes the Rebbe Victor Miller and says, Al Tifnu, don't turn to them no matter what. Never get involved with them whatsoever. Repartis Yosef learns it from the word Al Tivakshu by Shaul HaMelech. It says the word Bikshu Li. Search for me. We're telling them, don't get involved with this. And Rav Vigdamela then goes on and says, the holiness of our nation is that we go to our Rebbeim and our advisors, our spiritual advisors for advice, to try to find out what it is. If we get ourselves involved and take our advice from newspapers, radio, TVs, movies, etc., that's like Baal Ov nowadays. So the Baal Ov nowadays is getting your advice from entertainers and other people who have no idea what they're talking about.
What about the weather?
I'm sorry? I'm okay with you asking for the weather. I'm going to paskin that for you right now. Rip Hirsch has an unbelievable little thing over here. He says that Tuma here does not refer to actual Tuma. It refers to lack of free will and no choice. These oracles, he says, he's such a great Lushan. The oracles seek by moving their body, dancing and gyrating, sometimes by narcotic fumes. They put in drugs to lose their own powers and senses and fall under the power of the spirit, right? To become a medium for them. And that's the mental tuma that the Baal Ov seeks. You're going to the Baal Ov because you don't want to make a decision. You don't want to make the decision. You want someone else to make that decision for you. And that's wrong. You shouldn't use anybody in that way. Make your decision and then see, is that the right decision? Ask a rabbi, is that the correct decision to be able to make? But to ask the rabbi to make the decision for you is not the right way to be able to do so. Such a thing. The Nishal just doesn't want anybody else to. The idea is you want someone else to dictate everything to you, that you're going to do it, and we should not be doing such a thing. That's the idea behind it. We want you to be able to make your own decisions without magical powers getting in the mix, without you confusing yourself and getting involved with these types of things, and that's that. These people, the Baal Ov, cannot interpret the fate of the future of any man who has free will and is close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They stutter, they speak in riddles, they try to trick you into thinking that they know what's going on, but they don't. It's all a trick, it's all a lie, and a Jew can never think anything else like that. Then Tzivimin says, the whole reason why the nations got involved in this in the first place is because in Eretz Yisrael, you need rain. There's not enough fresh water to go around, you need rain. In order to figure out the rain cycle, they went to the Baal Ov. That's what they did, your weather channel, so to speak. Joking, it's still mostly to look at the weather channel. But nonetheless, they went to go find out just from this. We cannot get involved with stuff like that. We have to daven, and by davening, we'll get involved and we'll be able to do stuff like that. Now, We're going to get into this whole thing of Vadarta Pnei Zakein, there's a Chassam Sofer over here and everything like that. We're going to get into this. Shaul HaMelech had an issue, and we know, as we spoke before, the police were coming up against him, he didn't know what to do, and everything like that, right? He darshaned like this. He said, the only time that it's usher to go to a Baal Ov is L'tama Bahem, if you're going to become Tameh by doing so. Said Shaul HaMelech, but if I need it in order to bring about Kedusha, maybe that's Mutter. In other words, like this, Shaul HaMelech had an idea. I'm not going to use it for Tumah. I'm going to ask the Baal HaZov to start off the process. And then you know what's going to happen? I'll continue it with my Kedusha. Just bring up a mace, and I'll talk to him B'derech Kedusha. And in fact, that is exactly what happened. The Baal HaZov, when she called up Shmuel HaNavi appeared. She screamed, she was shocked, because she didn't expect Shmuel HaNavi to come to whatever it was. And immediately Shaul HaMelech started speaking with the dead guy. Normally it's not Shaul who can speak with Shmuel. It's the Baal Ov who does the whole conversation, and you're asking questions and the Baal Ov deals with it. But that's exactly what happened with Shaul and Shmuel. Shaul just wanted you, bring it up a little bit, and then I'll deal with it from there. And that's the idea of what had happened. Maybe that's the reason why he went to such a tzaddikus in the first place. A great woman who happened to know how to do Baal Ov in order to be a Baal Ov. I just need you to start it off. I don't want you to actually be a Baal Ov. I don't want you to do the whole process of what the Baal Ov does. I just want you to bring up the dead, and then I'll do the rest. I'll take care of the rest. That's what he wanted to do over here. And that's the reason why, says the Chassam Sofer, he was somewhat involved. His intentions were noble, but what he actually did was wrong. And although there he wasn't punished for it, in Divrei Hayamim it says one of the great sins of Shaul HaMelech is that he got involved with Baal Ov when he should not have done so. You look in the Nachal Shimon and the Oneg Yom Tov for a similar pshat. I will tell you, just think about it for a second. In Pasha Pshat in the Pasuk, this Baal Ov was, you know, some random witch woman, right? She called up Shmuel HaNavi, and Shmuel HaNavi's body came out from the dead to answer a Baal Ov. Listen, we're Jewish, right? We believe that tzaddikim are unbelievably powerful. Tzaddikim are unbelievably powerful in their lifetime. Tzaddikim are unbelievably powerful after they're dead. There is no way that this Baal HaZov could call out and allow this Shmuel HaNavi to come up from the dead. No way! How could that be? The Radbaz was asked that question by a tenet, by somebody who asked him the question in Tshuvas number 1067, in his Tshuvas. The Radbaz says the most unbelievable thing. Listen to this Radbaz. Radbaz says, number one, the power of Ov, what the magician does, is he takes powers of Tuma, Shadim, Hashbaos, which are oaths, as well as different Lachashim, words of magic, and enters them inside the body of the dead person that they want to call up. She does it from far away. According to the Ravid, it has to be right there on the grave. According to the Radbaz, it could be anywhere. You take all this stuff and you say these words and whatever it is, and you're thinking of the body, and you're putting all the tuma inside the body. What does that tuma do? The tuma raises the neshama. It sort of like squeezes out the neshama of that body and drags it over to the Baal HaZov to speak with the Baal HaZov. That's what happens. According to the Radbaz, it squeezes out the body and grabs it, that tuma, and grabs it and brings it in front of the Baal HaZov. Call it like Shadim, demons. Grab the body and bring it in front of the Baal HaZov. That's how the Radbaz says it. So he says the following. That way you reveal all the secrets that you know after you're dead. And you can tell certain things or stuff like that. It can't come up from a normal place. It has to come up from the armpit or from that area of the body down below. The reason why is because it's got to come up from a place of tumah, which means the dead person does not answer with his mouth. The mouth is not moving. The voice comes from a tameh place. There is no mouth moving of the dead person himself, and that's also why the dead person normally appears, anybody know, coming back from the dead, appears upside down. Head down to the ground, feet up in the air. That's normally how the person comes down, which is amazing, right? An absolutely amazing thing.
It doesn't really answer the question.
Hold on, we haven't finished. That's one thing. Number two, a body of a tzaddik is protected by his own neshama. His neshama kedosha that doesn't allow the body to be captured by demons for 12 months. Why 12 months? It takes 12 months for the body to rot. At the end of 12 months, the neshama leaves because the body will no longer be taken over by demons. It's rotted to the point where the demons won't take it over. And the neshama leaves. But for those 12 months, the neshama stays with the body, says the Radbaz, to make sure that no tuma, no demons will ever affect that body. Okay, that's what he says. Now, the woman here did everything she could in order for the tumah to enter the body of Shmuel HaNavi and bring out his neshama He had died within 12 months, which meant his neshama was there. So she wanted that tumah to drag the neshama of Shmuel and Avi to her. It never would have worked, because the neshama of a tzaddik is too powerful for this tumah to be able to affect. There was nothing that she was going to be able to do to get Shmuel and Avi to do it. But what would it have been? It would have been a bother. It would have been a bother to Shmuel and Avi. Shmuel and Avi would have sat there with that tumah, blocking it, maybe karate chopping it, you know, doing a little taekwondo, getting rid of all the tumah, and he would have gotten rid of the tumah, but it would have been a bother for him. So Hashem made a command and told Shmuel and Avi, listen Shmuel, they're trying to bring you up from the dead. Go by yourself. Go on your own. Do it on your own. So it wasn't done from the Baal HaSov. The Baal HaSov didn't do anything at all. Because the Baal HaSov was about to do it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Shmuel, do it on your own, do it b'kedusha. Which is why the Baal HaSov was shocked for three reasons. Number one, it takes a while for the tumah to do this. Shmuel and Avi appeared immediately. She was shocked. He appeared right there. Number two, when the tumah does it, it comes upside down. Shmuel and Avi appeared right side up. Number three, when it's tumah, it comes from the armpit or from that area of the body. Shmuel and Avi was speaking from his mouth. So she was shocked. She couldn't believe it. She said, you have to be an important person, she said to Shaul HaMelech. There's no way this could happen otherwise. It's got to be done through Kedusha, and I can't figure out why this is happening in the normal way. That's what ended up happening. And the Baal HaSov realized from right there, that there are great answers to this question. But how could she call up Shmuel and Avi from the dead? She didn't. She never would have. It was a Kadosh Baruch Hu that didn't instead. That is an amazing answer that's given over by what's called by the Red Vaz. There are about four or five other answers that I saw, but that's one of the most amazing answers I saw.
It never really existed?
No, Baal HaSov did exist, but would never have affected Kedusha. Would never affect the Kedusha, and somebody as holy as that. Ibn Ezra says, not at all. Okay. I'll just tell you, Rabbi Yitzhak Zilberstein, Alino Shabbat, says he was once in Switzerland. We'll end with this. He says in Switzerland, he saw a man in the middle of the street holding his skull and doing Ov. He was doing the actual magics of Ov, and people were surrounding him, and they were asking questions, and he was answering all their questions by talking to the skull, and getting the voice to come out from the skull itself.
What year was
this? It must have been within the last 20, 30 years, you know, something like that. Rabbi Zilberstein would have gone to Switzerland sometime around then. Let's say, yeah, I mean, Rabbi Yitzhak is still alive. He's Rabbi Yashiv's son-in-law. He's the brother-in-law of Rav Chaim Knievsky. Right, so he says that he was going around and he saw this, right? And he asked the craziest question. You know what the question was? What question would you ask? Is it motive for me to watch? You know, something like that, right? All he said was, let's say it was the skull of a Jew. And it was a Jew asking the questions. Okay? Am I allowed to grab the skull and burn it so that the Jew wouldn't do a sin by getting involved with Baal HaSov? Chai Kari's for it. Can I do that? That's the last question I would have asked. Literally the last question I would have asked. But nonetheless, am I allowed to do that or not? Am I allowed to... We all know it's usher to burn any bones of anybody. Are you allowed to do that for this thing in order to save somebody? And he brought a raya. The raya is a Gemara Sanhedrin, Kufd Aleph and Pei Beis. It's the exact same Gemara. The grandfather of Rebbe Preda. Do you guys know Rebbe Preda? Do you remember Rebbe Preda? He's the guy that taught his student 400 times, right? He taught his student 400 times. Rebbe Preda's grandfather, right, was walking around outside the gates of Yerushalayim. He was walking outside the gates. He saw a skull on the ground. So he picked it up and he buried it, right? He buried it in the ground. The skull popped back out. So he buried it again. Popped back out again. So Rebbe Preda's grandfather said, it must be the skull of Yehoyakim. Yehoyakim is the second to last king, well, third to last king, technically, of Bnei Yehuda, of Malchus Yehuda. After him came his son Yehoyakim, and then came Sittia. So Yehoyakim was an evil king. He tattooed God's name on that part of his body and was together with Zonos. He did terrible things, Yehoyakim. He would erase the names of Hashem out of the Sefer Torah and write in other names of Avodah Zarah instead. He was a horrible, horrible, horrible king, Yehoyakim. Okay, so he died. He was told at the end of his death, Zos Ba'odacharis, so you're going to have a horrible death, and there's another thing that's going to happen to you later on. So Rabbi Prater realized it must be, this is Yehoyakim's grave. He was told that his skull would never be buried. And this is Yehoyakim's skull. This must be it. So he wrapped it up in a cloth and he brought it home. He didn't know what to do with it. He wanted to ask the Chachamim what to do with it. So he put it in his house and hid it in his house. His wife found it. Okay, his wife found it, brought it to her neighbors and said, what do you think this is? They said, you know what it is? It's probably your husband's first wife's skull. He can't forget her. So he's bringing it home to do stuff with it, right? So she said, what should I do? They said, you should burn it. So she burned the skull into ashes. Rebbe prayed his grandfather came home, saw that she had burned into ashes, said like, oh no, it was Yoyakim the king. I mean, it's a likely story, right? But either way, at the end of the day, he said, Zos v'odachers is the other thing that happened to that skull. Unbelievable. Yitzhak Zilberstein asks a question. He says, how could she burn it? Granted, she's upset, right? It's the ex-wife's skull. If that was, you know, whatever. You can't burn a human being's skull. You can't do that. Why was she allowed to do that? Why did she even think that it was mitzvah? She's married to a great tzaddik, to a huge Talmud Chacham. This is not a slouch. Why was she allowed to do this? You know why? Because she thought that her husband was getting so involved with this skull, he was using it as oath. And if he was using it as oath, she said, you have to burn it to make sure that your husband doesn't do oath anymore. So there's a heter to burn a human body in order to make sure that you don't use it for avodah zarah or these magics. So Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein said, if it was a Jew, and there was a Jew paying attention, I would burn the skull. You would go ahead and burn the skull. So now you have a nafka mina. Ever see this happen? There's a Jew involved. Now you know what to do. All right, guys, we'll stop with that for right now. Good.